Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, I was just told that that good cause eviction bill may not apply to Assemblymember Engelbreit's district in the Setauket area because it would cover areas of the state that are seen to have certain kinds of housing conditions, and his district may not include any of those. So just acknowledging that what he said may be actually true. So have you ever tried the latest health fad or exercise program or diet only to find out that it just didn't work for you? Even a tried and true healthy habit backed by scientific studies can sometimes be confusing if you can't really tell if it's making a difference in your individual case, right? That's because science relies on an average result over a spread of people, and many of us can fall in the outlier category. So what if there was a way to participate in a scientific study that's all about your needs? Well, joining me now to discuss their project called The Study of Me and explain how you can participate are Ida Sim, physician and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, where she co-directs informatics and research innovation at the Clinical and Translational Sciences Institute, and Eric Heckler, family medicine and public health professor at the University of California, San Diego. Welcome to WNYC, Dr. Sim and Eric Heckler.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Wants to start? How does the study of me actually work?
I can start. The purpose of the Study of Me study is to help you experiment scientifically to reduce stress, be more focused, or be happier. The way it works is you choose one of four strategies, either physical activity, meditation, journaling, gratitude, or doing a random act of kindness. And what happens is you receive text messages just telling you whether to use that particular strategy or no strategy that day. And at the end, it's a 30-day study. We do our statistical analysis in the back, and you find out if that strategy worked for you or not. So not an average, not for people in general, but for you. So we're still enrolling at studyofme.org, and can sign up before June 14th to learn about whether a strategy works for you or not.
And Dr. Heckler, I see listeners can design their own self-experiment to test which interventions, like deep breathing, random acts of kindness, among other things that may be considered more specifically medical, actually works for an individual. You want to build on what Dr. Sim was saying on how people can access the study and design something that's individual?
Yeah, so as Ida had mentioned, the key thing to go to basically for getting involved is studyofme.org. If you go to that website, you can learn much more about it and the tools and the process. And in particular, I think a key thing to note for this is just as we were saying that most of the science that we offer right now, including in public health as a public health professional and professor, we tend to use randomized control trials, epidemiologic work. All this means is that we look at what happens at this abstract level of across groups. And in this study, you're really giving this opportunity to answer, does it work for me? Is it worth it for me? And so really the key is just going to studyofme.org to kind of learn more about that.
Can you give us, Dr. Sim, maybe a profile so listeners have a good example in mind of an individual who's participating and what they're doing with respect to their own health that they are now measuring with your help?
It's really for anybody who's interested in improving your own stress or being more focused or being happier. So when you sign up, you choose one of these strategies. Let's say it's gratitude journaling. You would then be prompted to Write down something that you were grateful for that day. And there are periods of time when you are doing gratitude journaling, and there are periods of time when you're not. And your text message will tell you what to be doing. And also, you will be filling out a questionnaire about your stress level, about how focused you are, or about how happy you are. Basically, this is like a randomized trial, but instead of randomizing a group of people to one intervention and a whole group of people to another intervention, it's randomizing you yourself to either being, in this case, on gratitude journaling or not. So that's why this is it's called an N of one study. It's a formal N of one study. And you use a scientific method so that you can be more systematic about finding if something works for you. So there are no restrictions on who can sign up. Actually, if you're over 18, mm-hmm. you can sign up.
Dr. Heckler, what past research does this build on? What's the scientific foundation for this?
Yeah, fantastic question. So everything that we chose to support here are public health behavior change interventions that have been shown through randomized controlled trials and whatnot to be effective in general. The key thing is to note that, just as you mentioned, there are some people where it works really well. There's some people where it kind of works. And for some people, it doesn't necessarily work at all. So we wanted to give people a tool beyond, you know, just the, you know, try it out in a sort of the natural way you normally do, give people a tool to actually systematically answer the question of, okay, am I one of these people that actually benefits from engaging in deep breathing, gratitude journaling for my stress and focus?
And so you're looking for the results from certain kinds of behaviors. These are all sort of a type, Dr. Sim, right? If you're talking about deep breathing and gratitude journaling, I did it again, and random acts of kindness, they fall in a kind of a category of behavior modification.
They
right?
are. They're all behavioral modifications that one can make, on your own. It doesn't require a doctor to prescribe you anything. And in fact, these are strategies that a lot of people use themselves anyway. Most of us sort of, unsystematically see if something works to improve our health. And this is just a more systematic way to get evidence about things that might help us improve our health. The strategy of an N of one study can be applied to medical interventions as well. But what we're really trying to do here also is to get people to think about how to ask questions about what works for their life and what it means to collect evidence that is meaningful to themselves, particularly for use in their daily lives.
So listeners, who has a question about that? Dr. Sim and Dr. Heckler are recruiting or inviting anybody to participate in this N of one experiment. N of one in science, if you don't know, means the number of subjects in the experiment is one. So you're the subject for the study of you, and the whole project is called the study of me. And if you have a question about it, you can call in at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or talk about any self-experimentation that you have done and how you have measured for yourself whether behavioral interventions are effective for you. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we'll continue with your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk to Dr. Ida Sim, MD from the University of California at San Francisco, and Dr. Eric Heckler, PhD, I think, from the University of California at San Diego, and their new project called The Study of Me. They're actually inviting people to participate in measuring the effectiveness on themselves of stress reduction and other health promotion techniques like deep breathing and gratitude journaling and random acts of kindness. And let's take a phone call. Kelly in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You got a question?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I just wanted to comment both that I'm glad that they are looking at this. I have an aversive reaction to anything that regarding something like meditation or focus. What I like to do when I'm really stressed out is I like to wash my clothes by hand, because it gives me a behavioral activity that frees my mind. There's something about sitting and meditating or sitting and focusing just on the stressor that is more difficult for me, and I need something procedurally that kind of has a structure and a ritual to it that then allows me that frees my thoughts.
Great. Really interesting, Dr. Heckler, that, Kelly's already been looking at her own responses to different kinds of techniques. If she wanted to participate in your study, how could she design something that would help her get even more information about what works for her based on what she already knows?
Well, so I think before we answer that question, I first want to just acknowledge your experience with that. I mean, I kind of boil this down to acknowledging that people are different, context matters, and both of these things are changing all the time, right? So what this means is often the one prescription, if you will, and like the one way to meditate or to do deep focus might not be right exactly for you, and you have to find the way to make it work for you. And so what we offer in this study protocol right now is, you know, the basic instructions on how, based on prior evidence on what to do, but we very much would invite you to figure out how to kind of make it your own as you do that, right? So for some people, meditation does make a lot more sense if you're going through some sort of, you know, routine, like you said, with laundry washing or whatnot. And I really applaud you for having that insight. What we could then do is you could do that as your version of meditation, but we'd have you try it on some days and then not try it on some other days, and then we could help to generate some sense on how is this actually helping with your stress, your focus, and whatnot.
Let's go to another caller, Anna Ruda at Hofstra University. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. So I'm an audiologist by training, and my area of expertise is tinnitus. I have a research lab at Hofstra University, and we do similar kinds of research on tinnitus. My question for the speaker is, how do you account for carryover effects from the experimental condition to the control condition? Meaning, if the participants have given to charity on day one and they end up feeling happy on that day, when they fill out the questionnaire on day two, which might be a control condition, and they're still feeling happy, it's not really the control condition. There are some carryover effects of happiness from the experimental condition.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one of the things one needs to be thinking about in designing end of one studies is sort of carryover effect. One standard way of approaching that is to have a washout period. So you may be on a treatment period, maybe it's meditation, and let's say that we think that meditation, the good effects from meditation carry on for, let's say, 2 days, then you might have a washout period where you're not doing anything for 3 days so that, you know, that effect sort of it extinguishes, and then you do your next treatment. It's just more complicated to do that kind of study. Certainly can be run through, you know, a text messaging system that guides you to that kind of a study protocol. But part of the issue here too is that we don't have evidence. We don't know how long it takes for something to wash out, like a behavioral intervention. Right. And of course, the washout period is going to be different for every person also. So this is really a different and a different way of thinking about these questions, and raises a lot of considerations about how to structure these studies in ways that give us the best information.
Anna Ruda, you found that behavioral modification affects the severity of people's tinnitus?
There are CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy approaches that are found to be helpful. What most people with tinnitus find helpful is what's called a sound therapy. So it's a low-level background sound that is being presented through their hearing aids, or if they don't have hearing loss, then through their apps or standalone devices. And that seems to get the brain out of this maladaptive strategy of listening to a sound, which is their tinnitus sound.
Anna Ruda, thank you so much for your call. Here's a question from a listener via Twitter. It says, can you ask the researchers what happens with the data they collect? Who wants that?
The data is collected by the study team, which is the study is headed by Dr. Richard Kravitz at UC Davis. So the data goes there. It's analyzed by Chris Schmidt at Brown University. And then you get a report with the statement about whether your intervention worked for you or not. And that data is not shared with anybody else. And it's, you know, the result is given to you at the end of the study.
You want to give us the larger or more of the larger context for this? Dr. Heckler, the focus of the study I see is to grow what's known as precision medicine. Can you talk about the field of precision medicine and where this fits in?
Yeah, and I would expand it also not just to precision medicine, but precision health, expanding this into public health as well. The focus of precision health is around the idea of trying to give the right support for the right person at the right time. Doing that is no small task, and it requires us to be able to move beyond averages. And so the approach we're advancing here with this N of one methodology is one of many feasible ways that we can help to get the right support to the right person at the right time. And in particular, and just to kind of connect this to why not just medicine, but also public health and our focus on this one, you know, in medicine, we have clinicians that can basically take the prior evidence, sit with their patient, and come up with the right tailored solution for them. We call that evidence-based medicine. In public health, we don't necessarily have that quite as much. And so one of the motivations, particularly for me personally, as a, you know, as a both a psychologist and a public health researcher, is to try to build a space where we can have these tools to enable people to figure out what's right for me. And so this is, in my mind, a key part of how we try to actually live up to this vision of getting the right support to the right person at the right time.
Let's take another call. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John. John, are you there? John once. John twice.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. John Doe. Yeah, I'm here.
Mr. Doe, go ahead.
Meditation never works for me. Journaling, you do these things alone. They're pointless, in my opinion. You need a group to talk to. I like doing random acts of kindness, picking up the garbage in the street, picking up somebody's dog waste. That makes me healthy.
Good. Thank you very much.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And that comes back to exactly the point that people are different, context matters, and both change, and we want to be able to honor that. And also for those who aren't quite sure how to improve their lives, we want to give them a process to be able to further refine and further improve their capacity to, you know, find focus, reduce stress.
Right.
So thank you for the comment.
And one of the other points about the whole precision medicine approach is we want to be patient-centered in our research. So instead of having a bunch of academic researchers decide what the question is, let's find out if gratitude journaling works. That's an answer perhaps, you know, for science in general, but for individual patients like the caller, only one of these makes sense, perhaps random acts of kindness. And so it's important that patients themselves or people themselves can ask the question that's meaningful for them and decide what kind of evidence you need to help improve your life.
And we should say that what you're going to have people measuring if they participate in this study is not kind of traditional medical metrics like heart rate and blood pressure and things like that. But you're looking at how they self-report after using whatever techniques they engage in on their focus and their stress and their happiness. Your website uses all three of those words, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's exactly right. And just to further build on Ida's point and this as well, you know, this is just one of many studies that we as a group are trying to advance and understand for this. So there's some of our work where we are quite literally working with lead people who are answering and running their own science studies, and we're providing a supportive role. We're also working on helping people to actually define how do they even measure their own definition of success. This is actually something my PhD student, Siley Fadak, had done in her dissertation work. How do we get it such that people have a metric that helps them to know that they're doing well, right? Like for some person in a dissertation, just to make it more concrete, their way of knowing that they're doing well is they don't feel they get to the train on time and they didn't feel like they were running to get it before it left.
And so if people want to sign up and participate in, quote, the study of me, they can do so at the study. Oh, it's not with the word the. The website is studyofme.org. Is that accurate?
That's right.
Correct.
Studyofme.org for people who might want to participate. Very interesting stuff. We thank Ida Sim from UC San Francisco and Eric Heckler from UC San Diego for sharing how this works. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.